see if we can get it a little clearer.
You want me to begin to?
Yeah.
Just say anything.
Tell me where you were born.
I was born in Madison in 1892.
And were you born in your own home?
I was born in my own home, which was on the corner of East Gorham and Livingston Street, and still occupied today by a legal firm.
Tell me about your house, because you lived there at the landmark beauty.
It was an enormous house, a large family, and the upshot was that we had to have a large house to live in. And we had rooms on three floors, and on the third floor of that house was really a gaming room, but it had a piano in it, and it also had marvelously waxed floors, and we taught all of the young people in the neighborhood to dance in that thing. And when I was in high school, we used to have spreads on the weekend. You see, we had to make our own fun in those days. There was no radio or television, so you made your own.
What do you mean by a spread?
A spread. Your classmates would all come, and their mothers would have baked the proper, made a bowl of potato salad, or baked the proper pan of brownies, and we ate up in that room.
And how many children were there in your family?
There were seven children in my family, and I was the third from the youngest.
Are you the surviving child now?
No, I have two sisters living. I think it's quite remarkable, Ruth, that the girls in the family all achieved octogenarian status. I have a sister in California. I have one who formerly lived in California, but now lives in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. And they're both of them are at present in nursing homes.
Are they older than you, or younger?
My sister Vera is younger than I am by several years, and my sister Esther is older than I am by several years.
Wasn't that marvelous?
Well, it was a wonderful family. As I say, we didn't have all this extraneous entertainment, so we created our own fun. We would play by the hour down at the lake, pounding stones and putting them into little vials to make pretty little geological arrangements. We didn't realize at the time that we were tampering it with nature, I'm afraid, but we did it at any rate.
Where did you go to school?
I went to the Lincoln School, which was at that time known as a second ward school. Every
must
school
have been just a couple of doors from where
it was only a brief block, and it was a wonderful school. We had no indoor facilities, so in the winter time we went out to an outdoor toilet house and sat on very frosty holes.
It makes me shudder to think.
It makes me shudder to think of it, too.
And you went there for eighth grade, then?
I went there through the eighth grade, and then went to the old Madison High School, which was then the old stone building in the present location of the location of Madison Area Technical College.
The old stone building, I gather, was removed.
That was removed, and the new building was erected. And we walked to school every day. Then, after graduating from high school, we went on. I went on to the university, and we walked every day of our lives from where we lived and back home again at lunchtime. I think probably my strong genes can be attributed to the fact that I had plenty of exercise
So I'm sure that must have made a difference. But he probably wouldn't have been able to stand the exercise if you hadn't had strong genes to
do it. Well, I had strong genes. I'm grateful to my parents.
What was your father's business?
My father was a lumberman. My father was also very much interested in politics. He was mayor of Madison at one time. Did you ever know that?
I didn't know that. No, when was that?
Well, there again, I'm weak on dates. Mm-hmm. He was approached by a group of businessmen in Madison who thought he had always been very much interested in politics and very much interested and felt a strong sense of commitment to doing his civic duty for the community in which he lived so many years. So he ran for mayor, and he said, I will do it with the proviso that I do it for one term and one term only. He said, it's very important to me to have time to dedicate to my family. And that's exactly what he did.
That's marvelous. You had two brothers, three brothers?
I had two brothers.
Two brothers and four sisters.
And five sisters.
And five sisters.
And five sisters.
And they all went to the university?
They all went to university, yes. They didn't all graduate. Some of them decided to marry before graduation time. And at that time, there seemed to be sort of a stigma against married women attending the university. Why that was, I haven't the faintest idea.
It was true in my time at the university. I remember a girl in our house got married, and it was, you would have thought she had done some dreadful, sinful thing, you know. She couldn't stay out in the house to make a move.
Oh, I...
That was when you were running it.
I was running what?
The university.
Oh, No, I never had ambitions in that direction, Ruth.
Well, were you, what do you recall about high school and the courses that you took and so on? Did you feel well prepared for college?
Yes, compared with, I was a B-plus student in high school. I felt very adequately prepared. At that day and age, You didn't go to college unless you knew your tables, which we used to call mathematics. You learned to spell by gum, or you were not graduated from high school. So when I got to college, it used to be sort of a joke in one of the English classes that I took. The boys used to pass their themes to me to check the spelling before they were turned in, because they were poor spellers. And I have a theory that spelling is either something you do naturally, or it's pretty tough going.
Did you have a lot of writing to do in your courses?
We wrote a theme every week.
And somebody read it?
The teacher read it and graded it. In grade school to retreat to the Lincoln School, as it was later called, we had a wonderful teacher in the fourth grade. I shall never forget her, Miss Herforth by name. And Sunday, Friday afternoon was a special afternoon in school. You got to do the things that you thought were fun to do. And she was strong on educating people in all phases of things. And she it's still humming. and she used to show us famous pictures of art on Friday afternoon, and then we'd always have a spelling countdown, as we called it.
Those are very exciting, I remember.
Well, you learn to spell not just by accident.
Mm-hmm. You understood what you were doing.
Well,
were practicing it all the time.
Yeah, well, she was a remarkable woman. She was completely, she was light miles ahead of her generation in teaching. She could teach a school today and employ with a firm but gentle hand all the techniques that are required of a good teacher today.
She probably did all those things.
She probably just did it instinctively.
It was part of her. Tell me about your social life.
Oh.
In a family of seven children and parties on the third floor of your house.
Social life. My father and mother believed very firmly in bringing friends to our home, and because we had a big house, that was Sunday nights were always, you were always allowed to invite a friend to have Sunday night supper, and then after that we would have a sing fest. And my father had quite a nice voice, and my sister, who was Stella Kaiser, who was a very beloved music teacher in Madison for many, many years until her death about 8 years ago, played the piano, and we sang songs. So we knew all the patriotic songs, we knew all the Christmas carols, we could just go through a whole book of songs without practically having to look at the pages.
No.
And you can keep it, I just didn't want it to rub on your trousers.
Oh, you can't.
Tell me about your outdoor recreation has been considerable since you lived right on the shore of the lake.
Well, we at a very early age, we had a swimming teacher who came and taught us all to swim. My parents were not willing to take any chances on having to fish a child out of the lake half saturated with lake water. And so we learned to swim at an early age. I was absolutely no good in athletics. As a matter of fact, when I was at the university, instead of, I tried to learn to bowl, the balls always went down the wrong trough. And finally, Miss Abby Mayhew, who was the director of that department at the time, decided that what I needed was to take a rest course over the period that would have been required for me to learn my other skills. So you can imagine, and there were three of my good friends who were in the same category, so you can imagine three giggly university girls lying on cots in Lathrop Hall and chatting through the entire hour. So joke.
It's interesting to know that in those days they recognized the need for relaxation. She must have thought that you were fancy, had some reason.
Maybe I was, yes, I don't know.
Were you a sorority girl?
I was a Pi Phi. And
your sisters too?
And my sister, we were all Pi Phis in my family, and after I was connected with the university, I just declined any connection with the sorority. I felt it was not the thing for me to do. And today I take rather a dim view of all the. Of course, we made wonderful friends in that way. I have had, I should say, lifelong friends. Well, I still have one friend, Florence Johnston, who lives in Appleton, Wisconsin, who was a member of the same sorority. No.
Now let me ask you just one question. Do you think that being a Madison girl, it was helpful to belong to the sorority, that helped you to get acquainted with people from outside of the city, other students?
Yes, I think there was that advantage in it. Although, we My family, we were all a rather gregarious type. We met friends easily, and we made friends easily. And it was an advantage in one respect, but as I say, I think a disadvantage in another way.
Let me go back for just a minute and ask you about your mother and father. You speak of them with great admiration. And I get the feeling from what you say that they were a team, that it was your mother and father that made these decisions about your swimming and all that.
Yes.
Both participated fully in the raising of the children.
They were very much, and they raised a family with a firm but gentle hand. My father was really, today I suppose he would have been a wonderful psychologist, because he understood the importance of sitting down and talking things through. If you did something that was a no-no, instead of giving you a whack on the fanny, he would sit down and explain to you why that wasn't a desirable thing to do. Now, that was really pretty advanced thinking for those days.
Also a representative commitment of time by him, that he had seven children to raise in that way. Tell me about your mother. Where did she come from?
My mother was a Madisonian. Her father was a lumberman, and she grew up in Madison and went to the Ladies Academy when she was a child.
Where was that?
That was on State Street, and so-called genteel ladies went to the academy when they became of high school age.
What year was that event?
Ruth, there again, that's my great weakness.
It must have been Civil War time.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Mm-hmm. But there weren't very many people, much less many women, going to academies in those days.
Well, you know, when I graduated from the university, the total enrollment of the university was 6,000 students, and when I think of the size of the university today, I don't understand how students are able to survive in that, with that terrific enrollment. They can't. I'm sure it's still a marvelous institution, but they can't have the personal attention that we had from teachers when we were in.
There weren't many women.
Well,
although my mother lived in Chadburn Hall, I think in about 1902, something like that, and that was full of women.
Well,
Chadburn Hall.
Well, I've heard it said that it was customary for women to go to college, but there was certainly no dearth of women when I was there. I graduated in the class of 1914.
And there were a large number of women. How big was the Pi Phi chapter?
Oh, they didn't run chapters the size that they do now. If sororities still exist, I understand there are still some that continue.
You lived in the Pi Phi house, must have been on Park Street, wasn't it?
Oh, no, it was on Langdon Street, right at the turn, the bend.
Where it still is now?
It's been taken over by some. The Pi Phi chapter is no longer active on it.
When you were there, that was the house that was the Pi Phi?
No. The original house was there. And a wonderful Madison architect by the name of Frank Riley redid the entire house. He converted it into sort of a colonial style, which is extremely charming. It was a beautiful house, really and truly.
Did you have a job in the summertime? Did women?
No. Your job was to stay home and help mother.
Did mother have a lot of help in the house?
Well, there was always help, and I sometimes laugh when I think about it now. We always had help. There was always a living help available. And that living help was paid the magnificent sum of $5 a week. And we had one woman who was with us for many, many years. And out of that magnificent salary that she was paid, she managed to buy a house in Madison and lived in great comfort to her dying day. Yeah, yes. As a matter of fact, once we went to visit her when my sister, who lived in North Carolina, was home, she said, "Let's go and visit Minnie." So we went to visit Minnie, and somebody said to Minnie, "You have," she was well along in her 90s at that time, and somebody said to her, "You must have had remarkable health all your life." And she said, "Well, I once had flu." And then she took us to the window and pointed out a peach tree that was planted in the garden. She said, "I planted that from a peach pit, and I hope I live to eat some of the fruit from it."
Did she think
so? Oh, no. No, she was 90, in her 90s at the time.
You mentioned a while ago about having a man come to teach you all to swim. I assume you had a pier behind your house.
Oh, there was a pier behind the house. We had boats. We had several boats. You know, with a large family, everybody had to have his chance at the oars, and that was an equal division of property. My father and mother worked out a schedule. And certain days, Helen was allowed to take the boat out, and other days it was Esther's turn or Stella's turn, and it was really a peaceful family existence, although it was all operated on a basis of do what your father and mother expect of you, and we knew exactly what they expected.
Did any of their children disappoint them?
My oldest brother, who was a fine businessman, went to Chicago to accept a job, and he went out to California on a vacation, fell in love with California, and moved to California. And that was the disappointment my father felt in him. He thought he was making a terrible mistake moving that far from home. California seemed a thousand miles away from Madison.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways.
No. Well, just now that you get on a plane and whiz through the air.
But your brother Paul, is it Paul who was the Ford agent?
Yes, Paul was the Ford agent, and died. He was one of the first men who had a transplant of the aorta. He sort of made medical records in Madison. Doctors today who date back that far still refer to the fact that that was marvelous surgery.
Oh, interesting. You must have had a genius of a doctor in those days.
He went to Mayo's for that surgery.
And he lived through that operation?
He lived quite comfortably for 2 years, and then the thing just went kaput, and he died of a blood clot.
Are there any Kaisers in the business now?
No, absolutely none.
He had no children?
Yes, he had two daughters, Ellen Frauchi and Judy Cook, who lives in the East. And somebody once said to Paul, it's a shame to just have to dump a highly successful business down the drain. But girls didn't operate businesses of that kind at that time. It'd be interesting to know if there are any women
women partying. There don't be many of them now.
Are there any?
I don't know. Certainly don't see any of that.
Well, there.
And of course, that was, and he, I assume, got into the business at a very propitious time when Fords were very much in demand. And
a man by the name of Fox had the agency of Madison in Madison, but he was just plain not a good businessman. So the Ford company just regulated by rule and wrote, and so they decided to replace him. And my brother Paul just happened to step in at the right time. Well, he learned in no time how to operate a business successfully. And I've been told that he was regarded as the most successful Ford dealer in the state of Wisconsin.
Tell me something about your sister Stella. She has so many admirers and loving
friends. Well, she was just a dedicated teacher, and children all, I adored her, and with good reason. She just gave absolutely unselfishly of herself to them. I think nobody will ever know how many children Stella taught without benefit of any remuneration. She believed that if children had a talent, they were entitled to pursue it, and it was wicked not to give them a chance to do it. David Welton, who is now a very successful doctor in Charlotte, North Carolina, was one of her project students, and I still hear from David, David used to play the organ at the old Capitol Theater in Madison. Capitol Theater is not the what was the Capitol Theater?
It is now the City Center.
Yes, right in that building. He played the organ, and he played classical music. He developed a style just all his own. So somebody said to me at one time, when he plays, it's like hearing Stella play. But that wasn't true. He had a certain schnitt for playing popular music.
The ball danced on the words.
Yeah.
We all got to sing with the organ and the
music. Yes, we all got to sing the old tape. And there was great patriotism in going to a movie in those days. At intermission time, you would, I don't know if you remember that, Ruth, you would, he would, David would play on the organ, and we'd all join in singing the patriotic.
From your days at the university, what the main interests of women students were? There were
having a good date.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that was. Everybody thought about Friday and Saturday.
That's just part of growing up, mm-hmm. isn't it, Ruth? Actually.
Well, and of course, there were plenty of places like the chocolate shop.
Oh yes. If you could get a beau to take you to a chocolate shop after a dance for one of those famous chocolate shop, Mr. Daniels, I think will go down in history as the creator of the best chocolate sauce in the
world.
And that hot Swiss milk.
Wasn't that wonderful?
And the lovely Sunday dinners they served there.
Oh, well, he wove himself into the hearts of, I think plenty of romance took place in Mr. Daniel's famous chocolate shop.
I'm sure, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Of course, there was a certain amount of romance going on at Lohmeyer's, too.
Were girls allowed in Lohmeyer's?
Yeah.
Wasn't that a beer joint?
It was a beer joint, but we were allowed there.
But
and
did,
the
did,
flame. We were allowed in Julius Giller's The Flame. Too.
Oh, what wonderful old Julius Giller.
And the campus, was that called, at the Herman Wagner?
Oh, I don't remember that.
I lived online. I never joined a sorority, so I lived in a room.
You didn't?
I never did. Some wonderful guardian angel tapped me on the shoulder at the right moment.
And said, this is not for you.
Yeah.
Good for you, Ruth. Yeah, I made good friends in belonging to a sorority, but I look back on the thing as a horrible mistake because I saw how many people were hurt by wanting to join a sorority, and we were really terrible snobs at heart, although we didn't think of it that way. We just thought that we were trying to create kind of a homogeneous group of people who could live together and enjoy good fun. And I must say that some intellectual discussion occasionally went on at the Pi-Fi house. We would invite one of our favorite professors to come over for dinner, and it was a question of who got to sit next to the teacher, not so much because we were looking for gems of wisdom, but I think it was provoked by the fact that it was a good chance to butter up your favorite teacher. We weren't beyond that at all.
Well, I lived in a house where so I ate all my meals in the union practically. And I realized when I graduated from college that what you say is true. My Wausau friends were all sorority girls. I was the only one that wasn't. I knew everybody they knew, and I also knew hundreds of people they'd never known. Because mingling around in other groups on the campus, you got acquainted with all different kinds of people. And they missed a lot of that. They were talking about just the other, at a little reunion we had a couple years ago, they were talking about that John Weaver, for instance, had been in the university with us, but they'd never met him. And they were talking about all the famous people out of our time that were here, but they never got to meet.
Was John Weaver the wonderful mathematician?
No, he was the man that became president of the university, you know. He was the Andrew Weaver's son, John.
Oh, of course, of course, of course, Ruth.
He was a debating partner of Jim's.
Well, was Jim a fraternity man?
He belonged briefly to the Chi Phi's, and then he belonged briefly to the SAEs. And in his sophomore year, he gave them all up.
Good for Jim.
Yeah, it took him a while to realize that.
Yeah, well, that isn't being a fraternity man wouldn't sit well with Jim, would it?
No, he has different interests than they had, I think. But nevertheless, it was a wonderful university.
Well, and it still is a wonderful university. I'm saddened to think they're having some of the problems they're having at the university today. I think President O'Neill is doing a valiant job, and it's unfortunate that economically these are just bad times for all schools, public and private.
Yeah, it strikes me as a very classy kind of person. I think they're very lucky to get him. Come here.
And his wife, have you met his wife?
Yeah.
Isn't she a charming person?
Very charming.
Yes, she's and
beautiful children.
What's a wonderful family. Are they enjoying living in the old Brittingham house?
I think so. Of course, that's a lovely thing.
Oh,
beautiful
piece of property.
Yes, just beautiful.
Is there still a squash court connected with
I think so. I think there's a swimming pool
there. A swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be. Well, they deserve that.
Mm-hmm. They really do. And a beautiful view out in all directions out there from that hill.
Yeah. Yes. Well, they're lucky to be in Madison. I think, and I do believe they appreciate it.
I think they do.
Yes.
But your sisters all went to the same university?
My sister-in-law.
Your sisters all went to the same university?
Well, we all went to university. That was, yes. Several of my older sisters became engaged while they were in the university, and they were more interested in matrimonial plans than they were in their university career, and two of them discontinued when they were juniors in college, which to this day they still regret.
And they never went back.
They never went back to complete their education, which was unfortunate, but...
We talked a little bit the other day about Stella, but not a whole lot, and you're mentioning going to London with her reminds me that she must have brought a lot of life and interest into your family, didn't she?
Oh, Stella, she was everybody's favorite. Somebody said to me at one time, aren't you jealous of everybody being so in love with Stella? And I said, no, I just consider myself extremely fortunate to be able to share her with all her admirers. She was such a dedicated person professionally. Somebody said to her, at one time, how come that you and your sister Helen never married? And Stella's reply was, we didn't know the last one that asked us to marry him was going to be the last one. Which was typically Stella, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
Your children studied with her,
didn't one of them, yes.
Yeah.
And enjoyed it. And I enjoyed it. I used to sit in on the lessons because I had to wait for Anne. And she really was. She had such marvelous taste in music that she passed on to kids.
Well, she often felt that if students, they weren't all designed to be Myra Hesses, and her theory was if she could impart an appreciation of music in the minds and hearts of these cunning young children, that was sufficient.
She was musical from the time she was born.
We had an old, beautiful, old-fashioned rosewood square piano, and from the time that Stella was old enough to toddle over and get herself up on the piano stool, she was twiddling with notes on the piano. It was just such an integral part of her, you know.
But not of any of the other children? No other musicians?
We all studied music in some way. Some had vocal lessons. I had piano lessons for many, many years, and I'm ashamed to say I didn't keep it up, but it gave me an appreciation of music that it has remained a lifelong thing with me. One of my sisters had a very pleasing voice. She studied voice, and another one studied violin, and that was agony for the family, because if you've ever had a six-year-old trying to hit the right strings on a violin, you know what agony that could be for a family. And we used to have a great time twitting her about it. But she was such a good-natured person that she took it all in stride.
But Stella really knew she was interested in piano.
She knew exactly where she wanted to go.
And she studied. She was in the music department at the university.
No, she was not. She was at the Wisconsin School of Music, which Ada Bird, a remarkable.
But did she study music at the university?
She studied music at the university, and there was a marvelous piano teacher by the name of Maud Fowler, and she studied with Maud Fowler for many years. She did graduate work at the University of Wisconsin. They have a good music department at the university, but really not as outstanding as it might have developed into, if I suppose, if there had been more funds to bring more professional people to the department. But Stella also studied in Germany with a wonderful teacher. Frau Gettingschaffen was her name, which we always stumbled around on, but she would very frequently go to Europe for a summer and study either in Germany or in England.
And she always preferred to teach it rather than be a performing artist herself?
Yes, absolutely. She had no interest, or she was an excellent musician herself, but that never appealed to her. It was a matter of sharing her own enthusiasm for music with young children, which she felt was so terribly important.
Was she one of the founders of the Wisconsin School of Music?
No, she was just on the staff at the School of Music. Ada Byrd was the founder of that music school. She lived in our neighborhood and used to hear Stella playing on the piano, and I remember her saying to my father at one time, "There's a girl who ought to have the opportunity to study music seriously. She has a unique talent for it." And how right Miss Byrd was.
Stella is a wonderful teacher.
Well, she really, and I appreciated that more. I appreciated it always, Ruth, but I think after Stella died and I began to hear people talk, well, she was really practically benighted by some of them, you know, in their enthusiasm. Now, Catherine Coleman is one of the persons I think I told you the other day who used to go to the School of Music for an hour, and she said, I'm not interested in learning to play the piano. I just want to be able to appreciate music. And if you can just sit down and discuss music with me for an hour each day that I come, that will just answer my demands.
I suppose she had a number of very, very good students, didn't
she? Oh, she had.
Who were successful musicians.
Very, very successful. As a matter of fact, she had a young man by the name of Larry Elliott, who still lives in Madison. He teaches piano and is a marvelous artist in addition to it. He paints in the style of Aaron Bowrod.
Oh.
And he and Mr. Bowrod are good friends. And Larry is absolutely a self-taught artist. He chatted with various artists at one time, thinking that he might go to the Art Institute and study with somebody there. And they said, "Don't ever make the mistake of studying. You have a natural talent, a natural gift for this, and it'll all be destroyed if you." So he's absolutely a self-taught artist.
Mm-hmm. But he was also a piano pupil.
An excellent piano pupil. He played with the Madison Civic Orchestra when he was only 16 years old, and did a stunning job. One of the favorite pictures in my kitchen is a picture of Larry. He's a very dear young man, and he comes to see me quite frequently, and we have wonderful hash sessions about, especially about Stella.
Mm-hmm. Well, she certainly had admirers all over the city, didn't she?
Yeah, she did, Ruth.
And she was so, always so pleasant and so respectful. I never heard her raise her voice with a child or anything.
No,
I never got cross with them. But I suppose they must have disappointed her from time to time. I know my child did. She didn't practice very much.
Well, still, they were getting something out of it, though,
sure,
Ruth. Yes. Stella was, I think, not only a beautiful person physically, she was beautiful within herself, too. She had marvelous ideals and
But she wasn't pompous or anything.
No. She
very
was
relaxed.
really quite a humble person, you know, Ruth. I lived with her all those years, and somebody said to me at one time, don't you and Stella have... Well, of course we had differences of opinion about things, but I said, anybody who can't live happily with Stella just better stop and think about it. You couldn't possibly have a violent argument with Stella. That just wasn't part of her nature.
Well, Madison was lucky to have her.
Well,
as long as they did.
Yeah, yes, they were, and I'm sure Madison appreciated her.
Now, can we go back for just a minute to your career in the Vita Room? Were you? Did you have a particular jurisdiction?
I was sophomore advisor,
mm-hmm.
which meant that students, when they got into their sophomore year, were needing some directives about, you had to begin to think about what your major field was going to be at that time, you had, because by the time you got to be a junior, you had to, I don't know if the same theory applies today, you had to be ready to declare your major, and many of them were just floundering. Well, that's a very difficult decision to make, I think. Some people just instinctively know that they're interested in medicine or law or professions of that nature, but many of them have no idea what they want are interested in, and so I began to be interested in finding out what I could about what job opportunities there were for young women when they left the university. And as a result of that, finally, I was devoting so much time to that sort of thing that I think there were days when I probably kind of cheated on other phases of the work. And so eventually, the placement office at the university came into being. It demanded a full-time person, and that was just a matter of the outgrowth of the work that we did and that I happened to be interested in the office. And Emily Chernick became the head of that department, and she became an advisor not only to women students but men students as well. She had a reeling feeling for that subject. She's living in California today, and she comes back faithfully every year for her reunion at the university. And she and I always have a wonderful visit together.
I gather she's made a wonderful spot for herself in Santa Barbara.
She has. She does volunteer teaching at one of the seminaries.
Mm-hmm.
She's very much involved in seminarian life. She's a superb cook, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they love to come over, and she has a favorite dish which she has dubbed her seminarian stew, because they come to her apartment or her house. She lives in a charming house in Santa Barbara, and they come over, and so it's just become sort of a standard joke that they have seminary and stew, which is very cute of her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the whole guidance and career part of the university, as you say, except if you wanted to go to law school or medical school,
yeah.
The rest of the people are just sort of floating around, and I think that they've needed more guidance and more information than they have, so that office got to be very, very busy, her office.
Oh, it was an enormously busy
office. Except when there aren't many jobs. It isn't very busy, you know, that's what gathered now. I was reading yesterday about how many fewer people, companies and people have come to interview this year.
Why do you think that is, Ruth?
Well, they just aren't hiring. I think it's depression time.
I thought, for instance, engineering jobs were just plentiful, but I heard from somebody the other day that even those are tapering off. Mm-hmm. Well,
when engineering is profitable, a lot of people rush into engineering school, of course,
and
then they fill up the jobs.
And then the market is glutted.
Yes, and then they wait again.
Do as many girls go into education as did formerly?
I guess I don't know. I think probably both men and women do, but not as many as they used to. And there's absolute shortage of people willing to teach science or mathematics in the high schools.
Well, they aren't equipped to do it, are they?
No, they don't. Nobody's. If you have a science or mathematical background, you go into another field where you make a lot more money. You don't go to teaching.
That's so right.
Fitting everybody together and making it all come out even is very difficult. And it may not.
That's one of the major problems, isn't it?
But I can remember in the days when I was a student and you were in the Dean of Women's office, and I don't know whether it was you or not, I got fooling around. I had wonderful grades in my freshman year, and I couldn't remember that I had studied very hard. So in my sophomore year, I was fooling around the first semester. At the end of 6 weeks, I got 2 D's.
Oh.
And
we
called me in. Yeah.
Yes. That was a routine thing we did. Well, it was done. I think it was hard for students to always understand it, but it was done with the idea of trying to find out what was basically the matter with their study habits. Maybe they were in a field that they couldn't handle, and so you if anybody had a D or 2 D's, they got a little invitation to come in and chat about the matter with us.
I thought, and that really stunned me, because I realized that somebody else was knew about what I had done.
You know, you thought that was strictly private.
I thought it was private and I could take care of it by myself, and then I realized that somebody had been looking at my record, and I better clean it up.
Well, the
And it did help, of course. It did help. I went right to work. And
you got bit busy.
Yeah, I got rid of them right away. But that was an interesting experience. And I must say, I enjoyed when I was briefly in the Dean of Women's office. I enjoyed those contacts when you invited people in just to talk to you about something. You meet a lot of very interesting students.
You know, that office kept a personal record card of every student in the university. Susan Davis took care of freshmen. I took care of sophomores. And Louise Troxell took care of juniors and seniors, because by the time the junior and senior class came along, there was considerable dwindling. Mm-hmm. And we sent for every student and invited them to come in to give us an opportunity to get acquainted with them, try to acquaint with them with the services of the office, and feel perfectly free and comfortable about coming in to chat with us at any times. Funny things used to occur in connection with that. I don't know whether that policy still prevails today, but if you missed the last class before vacation time, you were notice was sent to our office saying that the student had missed the last class, and I remember one student after another coming in to say, "Oh, their grandmother had died at Thanksgiving time, and they had to go home for grandma's funeral." Well, one day, I think after about five or six of them had trudged in with that, I did an extremely undiplomatic thing. I said to the next student that came in, "Now don't tell me your grandmother died." I thought I was giving it the light touch, but I may have only fooled myself on that. And with that, this girl burst into tears and said, "But my grandmother did die." And to my, she was a very prominent woman in Milwaukee, who lived in Milwaukee. And the following day, the papers were full of accounts of her sudden death. So
you had to be careful.
Yes, I had to learn how to.
I think at least I've been retired now for 3 years, but after. But Thanksgiving time, it's very common now for students to take that whole week off.
Oh.
And
do teachers pay much attention to class attendance now?
I don't think they do in the same way that they used to. I don't think they keep roll in the same way.
They don't?
I don't think so. I suppose some of them do, probably. It probably varies. And in smaller classes, of course, they notice that you weren't there.
Well, I understand they have a lot of social activity connected with students today on the last day of classes, and sometimes if there's a special occasion during the week or something like that, students bring goodies to class to eat, and even some of them occasionally bring a bottle of champagne, which is shared all the way around in the department.
I think that's right. I think there's...
Is that common practice?
And it does seem to me also that the school year is so short. Now, the university is now adjourned for all intents and purposes until about the last week of January.
That's right.
And we used to have that 2 weeks, and then we came back for examinations. And
well, I think in that respect that the university made a wise decision there, Ruth. I think the idea of going home for having a jolly Christmas vacation with all the festivities that go with it, and then having to come back and face up to exams, I think was a terrible strain on students. And I do think that the present system is an improvement in that way, although I do not agree with the university that beginning classes as before Labor Day, how they can alter that situation, I
don't know. I don't like it either, I think. But I also noticed that, for instance, in the law school, that long, long mid-year vacation, which started about maybe on the 15th of December and would end way, way in the third or fourth week of January, 5 or 6 weeks.
See, battery cassette recorder on the battery. I'm going to use it this afternoon to interview Helen Kaiser.
There we go. I'm going to just, this will be a tape, our second conversation with Helen Kaiser. Now, do you want to say something, Helen?
It's wonderful to have a visit with Ruth. I haven't seen her in a number of years, and she's just her same chipper self.
That's right.
Do you want to ask me a question?
There are a couple of things I want to review after our last meeting. But one is, I'd like to know more about your father. You told us about your mother and where she grew up and what she had done. And I'd like to know about your father and his business.
My father was a lumberman, and he had extensive lumber holdings in the northern part of the state. And at Christmas time, we always had we thought the most beautiful Christmas tree in Madison because it was specially selected by the man who worked for him up there. My father, incidentally, Ruth, did you know that he was mayor of Madison for one term? Mm. Did you know that?
Yeah, well, you told me
that. Oh, I'm repeating myself.
Just sort of, yeah. Mm. but he worked his whole career in Madison?
My father spent his entire career in...
Was he born in Madison?
No, my father was born in Germany and came to this country when he was just a matter of months old. And they, his family moved onto a farm in the area near Prairie du Chien. His father was a farmer. They were simple people. I never knew my grandfather. I never knew either of my grandmothers. I knew just my mother's father. I was denied all the privileges of being able to sing over the river and through the woods to grandfather's house we go.
They didn't live long enough.
No, they didn't.
It must have been quite a job to be a lumberman up in the northern part of Wisconsin and maintain your family in Madison.
Well, but my father was such a dedicated family man. We were never neglected by him, but he would be gone for long periods of time, particularly in the winter time. And he always arrived home with a deer somebody had shot on the property. So we indulged in venison steak during the winter time, which some people just dislike intensely, but my mother knew exactly how it should be prepared properly, and that was just regarded as a high treat in our family.
Did you have other wild game, ducks and...
Oh, yes, ducks and pheasants and, yeah, oh, yes.
Our fish.
Fish, fish galore, and of course, though, well, Ruth, you know, when you grow up in the horse and buggy age, you don't understand what the privations that people today would consider they were subjected to. You didn't have a refrigerator. You had an old fashioned ice box, and you know, speaking of buggies, reminds me, Ruth, of a thing, and I wonder whether that's still in existence today at the University Museum. My father used to take us down there if we were well behaved, of a Saturday afternoon, and Daniel Webster's carriage was there, and there was a man, a marvelous old black gentleman. We called him Uncle Sam, and we were permitted to sit in Daniel Webster's carriage.
Mm. That's really a treat.
Hmm? Is that museum still in operation?
The museum is certainly still in operation. And I think Daniel Webster's carriage is probably still there. I'm not absolutely sure that it's still. But I remember seeing it, but I never can tell either. It might have been 30 years ago when my children were little.
Did you take them on treats like that?
Yes, I used to take them.
Yeah.
Carloads of kids from the neighborhood. And then try to keep track of them all as they scampered around there.
Well, that you had a handful of responsibility, didn't you, Ruth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so that was your father's total business. He never retired?
My father retired at an early age.
I remember my grandmother and grandfather retired and went, but they were very young, went off to California in the wintertime. Both of them sleeping together in an upper berth with baskets of food to keep them on the trip. Because they didn't want to spend any money.
Well, but weren't those wonderful times, Ruth, when we traveled by train? I much preferred, of course, flying is marvelous, but on the other hand, you don't see anything of the countryside. Mm-hmm. And I hate to be denied that.
Were you able to travel by train? Did your family keep a cottage up there in the north?
Yes, we had a cottage up north, and in fact, up until about 10 years ago, my family still retained the cottage, and we would go and spend summer vacations on that beautiful lake up there. Of course, in addition to that, in the summertime, we lived on the lake, but my father would rent a cottage out in what is now Maple Bluff, and we would spend a summer out at Maple Bluff, or what is now part of Shorewood. There were cottages available there, and that was considered a very exciting vacation.
That was country living.
That was country living.
There were lots of them, I think. I talked to Mrs. Coleman. I had a long talk with her in the tape recorder. And, of course, the house that she lives in Maple Bluff, what originally was their cottage.
That's right.
They spent there the summers.
Yeah, there. How is Catherine these?
Well, she's quite feeble, but she certainly is nice.
Well,
she must have gone to school with you when you're starting.
She was in my class. Mm-hmm. She and her, I think they were, she and Jerome were twins. Mm-hmm. And they were so intellectual that it was just almost beyond any of us lowly folk to chat with them.
I know she went to Bryn Mawr, which sounded kind of...
Well, she was a marvelous student.
She gave the oration at your graduation.
She did?
Mm-hmm. She told me about that. If you graduated when she did. She was the class...
Graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. I did not attend Bryn Mawr.
Mm-hmm. No. So that... did any of your other family go into the lumber business?
No.
Nobody did?
No. My oldest brother was totally disinterested in it. He had a strict business career and eventually moved to California, which my father thought it was so dreadful to move that far away from the family that for a period of time he was almost unwilling to communicate with my brother.
Your father did have strong family feelings.
Oh, he had intense family feelings.
That's nice, though, isn't it?
Well, it made for beautiful family life. I feel badly when I think of families that are so sort of disrupted today. If they haven't had the experience of knowing what warm, caring family living is about, they can't ever know what they've missed, can they, Ruth?
No, they can't.
No, they don't.
And it's so easy for people to get sort of separated and go off in all different directions now.
Well, of course, that has advantages, but as far as the family unit is concerned, it makes a difference, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Yeah.
Well, when you graduated from college, did you go to work for the university right away?
To work when I graduated from
college?
No, I went into... social studies work for a period of time. I was down in Alabama, and that was a rude awakening for me because mm-hmm. I wasn't prepared for the attitude that many Southern people had toward black people at that time. I remember walking down the street one day with Roxy, a little woman, black girl, who came in to do housework and errands for us. And as I walked down the street with her, Roxy was at least 10 feet behind me, and I turned around and said, Roxy, I can't talk to you. Why don't you get up here? And she said, oh, no, ma'am, I ain't allowed to do that.
Mm, that's a shock.
That was a shock for me. But you learn to adjust to those things. And My feeling was just one of compassion to think that people could be born with such instinctive prejudices against people just because of the color of their skin.
What sort of work did you do when you were
I did out? Social work. Mm-hmm.
You worked for an agency?
I worked for the Tennessee Coal and Iron Company, mm-hmm. and we used to call on people in the area, try to make sure that they were comfortable and that their needs were being taken care of. It was an interesting job, but life in the South really and truly didn't agree with me in every respect. And after several years of that, I came back to Madison. I grew up at a time, Ruth, when it wasn't customary to get out and find a job when you were, the minute you graduated from college. You probably stayed at home and did helpful things for your family. And
learn to cook,
mm-hmm. learn to do the things that I think many young people today aren't given an opportunity to learn much about.
So you, when you came back, you were at home for a while?
I was at home for a number of years. And I did what everybody in that day and age was inclined to do. Either I thought I ought to run a tea room, which I would have been, I'm not a good businesswoman. I love to cook, but I would have been a poor operator of a tea shop, or to have a gift shop, which I had at one time.
Oh.
And that was an interesting experience for me too. I learned pretty quickly that I was not cut out for the competition and business field, and so I got out of that rather promptly.
Were you in it by yourself?
I was in it by myself. It was called the Shop of Helen Kaiser. It was over on Monona Avenue, next to the Orpheum Theater, and of course that was a wonderful time because Melvin Douglas, who was then Melvin Hesselberg, was playing in a stock company, the theater there, the Jackson Theater people. And Melvin and I got to be great friends. And once, many years later, after he had married Helen Gehagen and was operating out of California, I went to see him in a performance. And as we came away from the theater, all of a sudden Melvin walked out and he threw up his hands and he said, "Madison, Madison." He was.
Was this in New York?
This was in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles.
Yeah. No, it was wonderful fun to know him.
Yeah, he must have been a charming person.
And his father was a marvelous musician, you know.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, the family name was Hesselberg. As a matter of fact, he gave a concert at the one of the clubs. What do we call the college club?
Mm-hmm. University club.
No, not the university club.
The college club,
which was in the old Vilas house.
Yes.
Yes.
He gave a concert there. What was his instrument?
Hmm?
What was his instrument?
Piano.
Oh.
Oh, he was really a outstanding pianist.
Something escaped me for a moment there. But Melvin Douglas really lived a long and fruitful career, didn't he?
Oh,
he never really retired.
He kept right on going. I think he died when he was in his, along in his 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he continued to work in theater all during those years. He had a great talent for that mm-hmm. sort of thing. He fell into the right nest.
Yes. Well, then when you, what did you do? Did you sell your gift shop?
Did I what?
Did you sell it, the gift shop?
Yes, I sold it.
Mm-hmm.
And
that must have been quite a responsibility.
Well, it was, but I loved it because I loved pretty things, and it was fun to learn how to deal with a public, but I was just simply not cut out to be a businesswoman.
Did you lose a lot of money?
No, I disposed of it, and I did so and came out. I think even to the last nickel or dime.
Wonderful.
Yeah. so I was.
So you really did have some talent after.
No.
You figured that wasn't talent; that was just luck.
Yes.
Well, then what did you do next?
My next career was connected with the university.
Mm-hmm.
Louise Troxell was the dean of women and a marvelous persons, and she decided that it would be appropriate for me to take a job with the university and in her office. And it took a little persuading on her part to convince me I could handle the thing, because I had absolutely no training for the job. What training people have today, I'm not sure that it really prepares them for the job, because you just have to almost learn on a job of that kind, Ruth.
Use your instincts, Martin.
Yes, use your instincts in your heart, mm-hmm. if you have one.
You know, I did that kind of work. You know, I was in the dean of women's office briefly, and then I did, and now at the law school. And it is a matter of learning on the job, learning the practical answers to difficult questions.
Well, the thing that troubled me most about it was people would say to me, how are the little girls behaving? Well, of course, the job really had absolutely nothing to do with their behavior. It was a matter of trying to help them adjust to university life and to some of the many problems that come up in connection with it. There was always the dating problem for girls. Thank heavens, there were no at least we didn't know it if that sort of thing existed, that there were no drug problems, and drinking was pretty much a no-no at that time. It wasn't generally accepted that young ladies drank.
That's right.
No.
So you were in the dean of women's office, I remember, when I was a student.
Yeah, I remember that very well, Ruth.
And that's going on 45 years ago. Having my 45th reunion this year.
Do you go back to reunions, Ruth?
Yes, Jim and I always go. We figure some Madison people should show up, because some people come a long way, so we go. Particularly his, because he was the president of his class. And he didn't realize it was going to be a lifetime sentence when he when he got elected. But we do go.
Hmm?
We do go. And not many people come.
I went back to my fifth reunion, and as a friend of mine who had gone to Harvard, came back here with his wife to attend her reunion, union. And he said, only the fish come back for reunions, mm-hmm. around here. He just thought it was the most boring thing he'd ever attended. Well, I really had a pretty good time, although I must say that everybody looked so much fatter to me, especially the men. And I didn't find them terribly stimulating.
I found the rare, I've only had two, I think, high school reunions much more exciting and interesting.
That's absolutely true, Ruth. I used to go back for high school reunions, and that was fun. Well, of course, remember when I went to university, Ruth, the total enrollment was about 6,000 people. And so you really didn't have a chance to get acquainted with. Now, what people, young people do in this day and age, as far as getting acquainted, if they don't live in a dormitory or something like that, I don't know.
They're scattered out throughout the entire city now, of course. It's interesting how many students get elected to the city council or the county board.
Well, a lot of people just are awfully critical of young mm-hmm. people today. I'm not. I think they're wonderful. Mm-hmm. They're interested in public affairs. They're interested in a variety of things that we probably didn't realize were going on in the community in which we lived.
Well, of course, when you went to college, women didn't vote at all, I suppose.
No, we were voted. Mm-hmm. We voted. We voted and we walked to school.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't take a bus, right? And that was great fun. By the time we had collected people on our way from where I lived to get to the top of Bascom Hall, we had a perfect tribe. And I wouldn't give up those memories for anything in the world. We it was fun, you know, to get out and hike along. Probably we were just indulging in a lot of gossip. I don't think it was always on a high intellectual plane.
Was your major, what was your college major?
My college major was political science. Mm-hmm. And I was, and we lived in London one summer while my sister was studying piano, I did some work at the University of London in political science and in philosophy, and it was a tremendously interesting experience because European universities operate so totally different from
What in what way are they different?
Well, the students, for one thing, have a very different approach to their work, and it's one of great respect and deference to the teachers. There was absolutely no talking back to teachers. The whole system that they operated on a different time schedule. They operated on a different system of examinations. Examinations were rarely given. You were in such close contact with your teacher that the theory seemed to prevail that the teacher knew what you knew or failed to know by the time he'd gotten through with you for a semester, which has some merits, I think.
But you enjoyed studying political science in England.
How long
did you stay in London?
We were just for a summer.
It's my favorite city in the world.
I adore London. I've spent so much time in London and in England throughout. But I must say, like all touristy inclined people, Paris is still, it's the most beautiful city in the world, in my
opinion. I was so surprised to see how beautiful London was.
Well,
I was angry at my friends that had never told me how beautiful. Every corner you go around, there's a little plot of flowers,
planted
marigolds.
Yes, well, that's typically British, isn't it?
Yeah, every inch of ground is.
And those adorable little Liza Doolittles, mm-hmm. on the street corner with their bunches of violets.
Yeah.
You know, British people have a great affection. Ruth, why do we call them British and when do we call them English? Do you
know? I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that. I was discussing that with a friend of mine the other day and he didn't know the answer, and I said, well, we'll have to do a little research project on that.
I just wouldn't know about that. So that when you, when you came to work for Louise Trock, so that was, you were with Susan B. Davis and
Davis and Zoe Bayliss.
And you were the.
We were the quartet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great staff. There was never any disagreement among any of us. We just were extremely fortunate. Our personalities, we were totally different. Mm-hmm. Susan Davis, of course, was a marvelous Wisconsin historian. She was very much, Zoe Bayliss was extremely prim and proper, and that had an effect maybe on some of the rest of us, but of course Louise Troxell had been my practically my lifelong friend, so my affection was deeply implanted in her.
Then maybe we should talk a little bit about her. I suppose that when she left, she may have been interviewed by the archivist. I hope she was, about her.
Well, she when she left Madison, you know, she moved to California.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether, is this a national sort of a program?
I don't think so, but they have extensive interviews with emeritus people. And I hope that somebody interviewed her, because she lived through a very important, her career made a very important developmental stage in the university, too.
That's right. We lived through all the good years at the university, and I suppose we lived through some of the bad years.
The Depression years.
Yes, that's true. Although, you know, strangely enough, people put so much emphasis on depression years. Now, I don't remember, I can't say that we ever suffered because of the depression years.
I don't think so. But there must have been students who did.
Oh, students, I think there are students who still suffer today, Ruth.
Yes.
I'm sure of that.
Well, the whole life of girls was different in those days. When I was in the university, in the middle of the 1930s, we stayed out till 10:30 during the week, and we were in at 12:30 at night.
And you were in.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yes. There was no. Did they have WSGA
yeah.
rule set the rules? That was an interesting setup in a way, because that meant that students had a voice in hours and all of the activities that went on the campus. Isn't that true?
That's right. In the houses and in the dormitories. I lived 1 year at Chadburn Hall.
Oh, that.
Which I went to because my mother had stayed there in 1904 or 5.
Really? Yes. Oh, that was a beautiful
house.
I still am sad when I go around that corner, because I have so many happy recollections of both Chadburn and Barnard Hall, which were, of course, right next to Lathrop Hall, where our offices were.
But Chadburn was a beautiful place, I thought, and the suites of rooms, the space that we were given.
Absolute luxury today.
It really was. And, of course, these newer buildings, everything is built in. You can't move your furniture around. But I remember Mrs. Elvium saying once that when she was in college, the one thing that she could count on if she was down in the dumps or something going wrong, she could always go back to her room and rearrange the furniture. But you can't do that now. Everything is built in those dormitories. The beds are stationary. And
Well, that's one of the disadvantages of modern technology.
Mm-hmm, it is. And the space that was allocated, of course, is so expensive now, they wouldn't have been able ever to give students the two-room suites that we have in the big closets and the balconies.
Well, let's not make the sadden the younger generation to know what they're missing.
What they're missing, that's right.
And they are missing something, mm-hmm. aren't they?
Of course, yeah, we missed something too, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely. I'm perfectly sure if I were a young person today, I'd be doing. I'd want to try everything. When people are condemned because young people are condemned because they're into drugs and things like that, there isn't a doubt in my mind that I would